John Busby with the Culture Buzz, and it's my distinct honor and pleasure to be chatting with Norman Lear. Yes, he is that Norman Lear. I didn't find some hog farmer in Southeast Iowa that just happened to be named Norman Lear also. But Mr. Lear does have Iowa connections, but I think the big thing is that this is probably one of the most incredible books I've ever written. He has written his memoir. It is a fantastic book, and you can tell you're going to be venturing into some great territory when the title of a memoir by a person doesn't have his name on it except to say who wrote it. It's called Even This I Get to Experience. If you're just hearing about this book for the first time, if you haven't read it yet, put this on your list of books to get, to read, to cherish, and we'll find out more about that later. If you want to find out more about the book, the author, and a lot of other things, you can go to www.normanlear.com. And I'm going to shut up because I really want to listen to you, Norm. I had the privilege last December when you were in Iowa being feted at a couple of different things. When you presented down in Greenfield, Iowa, and we'll touch on that, but you talked about your book, and what really resonated in me is that your book is so much more than a memoir. Here's how I describe it. I consider that this is a wonderful memoir from which the savvy, receptive reader can use as a gateway to a library of timeless life philosophy. That's how I want to start this interview, because
wow.
It's fantastic stuff.
I don't know how to say thank you. I couldn't be more grateful for, well, grateful is not the first thing. Grateful is second. The first is, wow, really?
Well,
I'm so glad you feel that strongly about it.
It's like the very best of chocolate. You just want to savor a little bit at a time. So I find myself not trying to inhale big chunks of your book as I go through it, but just savoring it like just the finest of cognacs or something like that.
Well, I love hearing it. I could sit here hearing that all day, but perhaps those listening would like to get on with it.
Well, let's start right there with the title, Even This I Get to Experience. That's a captivating title, and it obviously there's a great backstory behind it. Please share that with us.
Well, the backstory basically is my life. It's what I've come to understand is, I don't know, it might have started when I celebrated or others helped me celebrate my 80th birthday. I think it was my 80th. I'm 92. So I think it was my 80th. It was a big event at one of the major hotels here, and a lot of money was raised for People for the American Way, one of my pet involvements, and I had the last word, as one does in at such occasions, and I'm thanking everybody, and as I'm thanking them, I'm thinking of something, and I finally wind up talking about it, and I said, you know, I've got to tell you, as I thank you, I'm thinking of this evening is over, I said. It's clearly over in my mind, because as I talk to you, I'm thinking about the taste of coffee tomorrow morning and the sight of my kids tomorrow morning. And that suggests that this is over. And then I took a breath and I thought, you know, maybe the two least, as we think about it, least consequential words, among the least consequential words that should be consequential, are the words over and next. I said, because something is over, it's over, and we're on to next. And I've loved this evening, but it's clearly over. You guys are waiting to get up, get your, you know, find your cars and drive off. And I'm thinking of coffee the next morning. And I don't think I said it that night, but I thought afterwards about how important over and next is in one's life, and the hammock in the middle. If there were a hammock between over and next, that would be what the philosophers mean when in their various ways they have talked about living in the moment.
That paints a perfect picture. I just see myself swaying in a soft summer breeze on that hammock.
I like that.
Well, you know,
and that's the moment.
Having grown up as an Iowa farm boy, kind of a farmer's analogy I use for your life, and this is how I see it, and is that you make things happen and you move to the next because you keep building on what has preceded that moment. You're almost like a farmer with a handful of seed, and that handful of seed yields a large crop. And you hope that that crop goes out and keeps going. So that's what you're doing. You keep sowing these seeds of creativity in my mind. So
I like that metaphor a lot. I've not thought of it that way, but I will from now on.
Well, it's the Iowa connection that I really appreciate. And I mean this. There, every so often, as I visit with authors, as I talk to artists, there are books that come along that I consider resource books. This is what even this I get to experience is to me. It's a resource book because I can reread and re-reread sections I've already seen and find something new because our lives are so fluid that at that particular time, I've gained a different insight for that same event you've documented so wonderfully in your book.
You run deep, John.
When you get good clay to build a pot with, the vessel comes out pretty good. And so I've got good clay I'm working with.
Good.
Well, I said that one thing we have to touch base on because I've now developed a new and special relationship with the folks in Greenfield and a good.
Aren't they fabulous?
It's just such a perfect town. I wish I could have been part of that glorious experience, the production experience in 69, because those bonds are as strong as ever. The town loves you. You love the town.
Oh, I want to tell you about one person and one incident in this last trip to Greenfield in December. I was so touched myself by somebody that I had touched. And the story bears it out. It's a simple story. She's now 51. She was 6 years old when I made the picture. I'm fighting to remember her name, and I apologize for not remembering her name. But she's very memorable as a little 6-year-old girl. The film was about Greenfield, which we in the film called.
Cold Turkey.
No, the film was called Turkey.
Yep.
The name of the town. I'm trying to remember. And so it was. The town was called something else. But everybody gave up. Eagle Rock.
There we are.
All of the smokers gave up. Signed a pledge to give up smoking. So I had a montage in the film. The following morning, when everybody woke up for the first time and couldn't take that puff of a cigarette. Because they had signed a pledge not to. And I did a montage, a series of quick scenes, in which we saw people as upset as they might be in such a situation. One of those moments, a fragment, 3 seconds, was a little girl, 6-year-old little girl, wearing glasses, crossing the street, and a traffic monitor, screaming at her. She was crossing at the wrong time, but I mean screaming. She was a smoker who hadn't smoked yet, and that's what she was playing. So it was only 3 or 4 seconds.
But
30 years ago, at the 30th anniversary, Greenfield had us. Dick Van Dyke came along then, and Gene Stapleton came along then. We were all there as guests. The little girl was now 30-something. And she told me how deeply she had been touched by being in the film and so forth. Now in December, she's 51, and she's read the book. And she had me, and she was in tears, she had me in tears in Greenfield. We're standing alone, and she's telling me, Mr. Lear, I want you to understand what that moment meant to me when you selected me and I became the little girl in the film and then you were kind to me throughout the making of the film, etc. She said, I read your book and she said, your father was in prison. You were alone. you were going. They had sent you to one relative after another, and you spent a summer with a bunch of relatives at this beach town. And you, the most important thing to you that summer was a gray and blue T-shirt. You were comforted by that T-shirt. The adults were not paying any attention to you. You were just another kid hanging around. But you were just another kid without a mother and a father. Your mother had gone off with your sister somewhere. And you were utterly alone, with family, but utterly alone. And you write about this blue and gray T-shirt. It was the most comforting thing you had in your life that summer. She said, I read about that and I cried. And I had a way now of explaining. I can't believe I have the opportunity to tell you in person, but I want to tell you, you were that T-shirt to me when you said, I want you to play this little role. That's the life meaning it had for me. And, John, for the first time, the feeling of that sweatshirt all summer, if I said T-shirt, I meant sweatshirt, all summer, which I would put on every night if it was washed. I couldn't wait to being washed. I couldn't wait for it to see it hanging up to dry. I couldn't wait to put it on. It made my summer. And so we connected on that. I understood, because I had tossed off, yes, fine, she was touched that I had selected her. But what it meant to her, I understood when she made that analogy.
It resonates between the two of you, and that's the kind of wake you've been leading for over 90 years in your life. Your memoir, Even This I Get to Experience, is filled with all the touchstones for anyone who's followed your career can enjoy. But you wrap these wonderfully and truly, for the careful reader, in life philosophy, because this is an important part of what I saw you as you were speaking in Greenfield that day in December. Imparting to the rest of us is that don't just have the experiences and then forget about them. Weave them into your life and to the relevance of your life. And that's what I gained from your words that day. It's what I'm gaining from your book as I read it and reread it and have fun with it. And it's a legacy that is wonderful.
Well, I love to hear it. And the part, you know, the legacy of Iowa in my life is... had I not made cold turkey in Iowa and got to know Iowans, All in the Family would have been, I think my experience with All in the Family would have been different. Because when the program practices people, who were the, that was a euphemism for censor, when those people said, oh, she can't say that, or you can't do this, or I'm talking about, I can't deal with a problem that it's a part of family life, whether it's something as important as abortion or as insignificant or, well, nothing insignificant in family life, an economic problem or whatever
right.
We were dealing with. When they said, oh, you can't do that, they used to say, at the same time, it won't fly in Des Moines. That was an expression that came with the territory. It won't fly in Des Moines. Well, I felt like I was from Des Moines. Not just I made a film there. I was from Des Moines. And that gave me the strength. It was one of the elements that gave me the strength to say, no way. Take that out. Insist I take that out. I won't be here the next day.
Well, I speak for a legion of not just fans, but people who have gleaned so much from All in the Family that you standing your ground has meant so much to generations of people who have enjoyed and savored and experienced and dissected and gained philosophy and insights from that wonderful show. It's just wonderful, and it's great to have that connect. Now, you also had another Iowa connection, and I'd love to find out a little bit more how much time you work with Marion Reese, but she was from, of course, Lamar's, Iowa, out in the western part of the state, but you worked with her out in Hollywood, didn't you?
She was, but I think I met her as Bud Yorkin's secretary. She became our secretary. Secretaries are now associates. We don't use the word much anymore. Maybe they do in the legal field, but we don't do much in California. And but she was the glue that kept us together, Marion Reese. She went on to become her own legendary producer. I talked to her, you know, maybe once a year now. She lives up north in Northern California. But, relationships between men, partners, and so forth require the glue of a great woman. That's my experience. All the shows did, too, and I write about that in the book, as you know.
Yes.
The glue that held everything together, putting on these shows, might have been the woman who was holding the script or gained the title of associate producer. But it was 95% of the time a woman, and with the motherly instincts to keep a rowdy group together.
Well, I appreciate that, having grown up in a three-generation Iowa farmstead, and it was a matriarchal farmstead, but it was a good one. But I had to mention Marion because of that connection. It wasn't until I read that in your book about her. She also was very supportive of what was then a week-long Donna Reed Festival back in the 90s.
Uh-huh.
And my wife also taught at that festival, and she got to know Marion, and she said, this woman has the best core values you could ever find. If there is a woman in the industry to emulate, this is the woman to emulate.
Oh, how nice, how nice. And quite true.
And, you know, cold turkey, it's something you said. I'm going to let you expand on this, but for films that were made in Iowa, if people talk about major motion pictures and then Iowa in the same sentence, they often think of Field of Dreams or Bridges of Madison County. For my money, the film that had the most impact in Iowa and has easily the staying power of any other film is Cold Turkey.
Well, I love hearing that because I looked at the film recently and I couldn't believe how relevant it was for this moment in time, because it's in a sense, it's less about giving up smoking than it is about the impact of the media and the way things come together around business values and affect the media and the way that impacts in this case, an average small American town. When the President of the United States winds up coming there because he has to get into the publicity, he has to be on that bandwagon. That statement, and everything that preceded it, I adore having made that statement.
Well, that is such a wonderful, compact, complete package of the study of human nature, which is really what one of your major gifts is, and you translate it through television, through film.
Oh, thanks.
Well, I mean, I'm an Iowa farm boy. I have to speak the truth, and otherwise God God will smite me, and then I'm in trouble. But I truly appreciate the bonds that you've connected and you've shared with people around the world.
Your former not first lady, but vice governor, assisted us. What's the expression for the?
Mamie Eisenhower?
No.
I went back to her, but.
Sally
Peterson.
Sally Peterson.
She is such a sweetheart.
How about that lady?
Oh,
well, she and her husband Jim Autry are great friends. Great friends. And that all started in Iowa.
I first met Jim Autry back in the early 90s when I was doing marketing work for the Des Moines Club.
Uh-huh.
And he was going to give a presentation at noon. and he didn't have time to update his bio. So he asked me to do it, and I did it, and he came up after the presentation, "John, may I use this?" I said, "Holy smoke, of course you can use this." But that's when I first got to know him. And then Sally Peterson, when she was lieutenant governor.
Lieutenant governor.
Such a champion for arts and humanity. You could never find a better one.
Oh, yeah. They're one of my favorite couples in the world.
And they, again, have one of those resource books that I promote all the time, the Choosing Gratitude 365 Days a Year. It's just a great book.
Well, he writes wonderful poetry.
He is.
Bill Reichardt is another chap I fell in love with back there.
Yeah, he's one we definitely miss. Someone else I had the privilege of running into a few times and visiting with and gaining some great counsel from him.
Yeah, he was a great guy. Well, I met a lot of wonderful people.
Well, that wonderfulness is just a world of reciprocity when it comes to you. And as we wrap things up, I have to let the folks know, go to normanlear.com for the website. Get this book. Even this I get to experience. Get a bunch of these books, because if you have friends who haven't read it and you can gift them with this book, you will have done yourself a favor, them a favor. Go to your local independent bookseller for the book. Norman Lear, I can't wait to see what kind of creative mischief you're going to be coming at with us next.
John, you couldn't be kinder, and I couldn't appreciate it more. Thank you so much.
Well, thank you, and you take care, and much continued success.
Good. Thank you, and to you, and I hope we find a way to stay in touch.
I hope so, too. Take care.
Bye.
Bye-bye.